Welcome back, everybody. Time for another episode of Confident ROI, the one show you can be confident will give you a real return on your investment this morning. Whether you work in a business, work on a business, work with a business, or work in your own business, from the man who's done all of the above, Alex Verovio. Hey, Alex.
Hey, Paul.
What part of the command structure are you coming to from us today here?
Well, we're calling from the Northern Command.
Okay, how's the Canadian border looking? Is it open? Is it clear? Are the Canadians flooding across yet?
It looks to be quiet on the Canadian border currently.
Okay, all right, good. Just a few ducks flying across here, right?
Yeah, ironically, though, I've just returned from south of the border.
You have? Oh, okay. Where were you?
I have.
Where were you?
I was in Mexico City.
Wow. I've never been to Mexico City. It's supposed to be quite something, quite the contrast between, you know, quite a crush of humanity.
It makes L.A. look small.
Yeah, right. It's supposed to be huge. I don't know what the size of it is, but there's quite a lot of people.
It was over 20 million. It was close to 20 to 25 million.
Wow.
So it was a pretty interesting thing. My book was actually what took me down there.
Really? Has it been translated into other languages like Spanish?
It has not yet, but someone gave it to a business owner down there, and they got in contact with me, and they asked me to come down there, and I spent a couple days down there assessing their team, and I did it where their primary language was not English.
Wow, so that's a challenge. All right, there you go.
Well, I couldn't rely on the assessing what they were saying. But it was funny, all those Thanksgiving dinners I had with my parents and my grandma, when they had conversations in Russian that they didn't want me to hear, they really came in handy because I had to read how they were saying it and the tone of what they were saying, and it actually kind of freed me up from listening to what they were saying.
Interesting. Wow. And there, you might have discovered a whole new book, a whole new way of negotiating. Just tune out and tune in.
Well, when you can so easy to get wrapped around the axle on specific things, but right. When you look at how people are interacting and how they're trying to solve something or not, or it's not getting solved, it's a universal language.
Yeah,
that
right.
When people are talking and there's a connection or kind of a disconnection and it's not getting solved here.
Suddenly you see people looking down at the floor and you say, oh, this isn't working. Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's not just in English that's happening. So
fascinating. All right. Well, give us the book again. Once again, maybe somebody else will hear it today and have similar thoughts to check you out here. What's the name of the book and where do they get it?
It is called Transform Your Company. It is available on Amazon, of course, as well as Audible.com. Mm. So if you don't get enough of my nasally voice, you can listen to me read it on Audible anywhere in the world.
Fascinating. Okay.
And actually, one of our guests today, Brian Silver, was involved in my research for this book. So It's exciting to have him on and talk about the aspects of the book that how they use it in their company today to grow a billion-dollar company that does specialty construction on an international basis.
Did you say B with a billion? A billion with a B there?
B with a billion. It's wow. It's on their website on how they're growing their company. And I'm looking forward to talking with him because I've known Brian for about 5-6 years, and he's always talked about the company he works for and how they align people and how they do what they do across the country and across oceans. And as I started researching them and looking more deeply into it, I was amazed by how aligned they were. A lot of times people talk about their company and when you look at it, when you look underneath, is it really all the same? But
yeah.
This company, they are all singing from the same hymn.
And maybe across different languages, too, if it's different countries and stuff here. So maybe the same challenge you saw in Mexico. Well, I'm going to step out and let him step in. Why don't you introduce him?
I want to welcome Brian Silver, the CFO of the Western Region of Gray Construction. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Alex. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks for coming on. If you could tell people about Gray Construction and what makes it unique.
Sure. It's a great company to work for, Alex. I've been there. I had my 20-year anniversary this past February. You know, Gray has been in business for nearly 60 years. It's a family-owned and employee-owned business. About a third of the company at present is owned by the employees through an employee stock ownership plan. And Gray is comprised of multiple companies that operate independently, except for a few significant items. We share common values and purpose, a common brand identity across the country, and a common safety program across the country as well. So while there are 10 or so companies that roll into the Gray family of companies, we are similar yet different for regional purposes, for customer purposes. At present, we have about 900 employees, and we will do about $1.3 billion in business this year.
I figured it surpassed the billion that they talked about in the video on the website. Could you tell us the early story about the company's founding and what happened to the founder early on and how the company survived that challenge?
Sure, Alex. It's such a neat story about, you know, a family that started a company in Glasgow, Kentucky in 1960. James Norris Gray met his wife Lois in the war and got married after, had six children. And in 1960, I think with a variety of mouths to feed, James Norris Gray was always quite an entrepreneur. The construction business, really building barns in central Kentucky. And from there, the company grew, started to take off. But in those early days, it's funny, we think back and we found some notes from back in the days of planning meetings and things that took place around the kitchen table at the farm on how they should grow the company, how they should treat people, customer issues that they dealt with as the company continued to grow. Tragically, James Norris passed in the early 70s quickly, and the company was at that time left to be run by Howard Gray, who was 23 years old and fresh out of school. And Howard's brother Jimmy was finishing school at Vanderbilt, and he would come home on the weekends and he would work in the business in the field and in the office and sales and marketing. So as these two young boys took over the company, they quickly drove it into the ground and almost bankrupted the company to a point where Mrs. Gray had to literally mortgage the farm to raise some funds to help keep the company afloat. So the company continued to grow and be successful through the 70s. And on into the 80s, where I would say the company really took a major leap forward in working for Japanese companies that were starting to build plants in the central and southern part of the United States. So the first Japanese project that Gray did was for Toshiba, and that really opened the floodgates and opened Gray's eyes to the international market, to a broader way, more sophisticated way of doing things. And the company continued to grow and add additional services in the forms of architecture and engineering and many other things, developing programs, really kind of a great American success story of a family-owned business that stuck to its core values and continued to grow and do what it does best.
Talk about those core values. When did they get started and what are they and how have they helped lead the company through a number of different phases?
You know, Alex, since really the founding of the company, the early days, I think James Norris and Lois Gray, they knew that work was more than just, you know, buildings and concrete and steel. It was about treating others with respect, achieving team goals, a lot of focus on team-oriented activities, and growing the business, and most importantly, coming home safely. I remember many, many times Howard Gray saying, you know, it's our obligation to have people come home in the same condition that they went to work that day. So with that base understanding and kind of streaming over the years, I want to say it was 5 or 6 years ago through, you know, some really targeted strategic planning meetings, we came up with a purpose statement and three core values that are common across all the Gray family of companies today. At the time, Alex, the company was holding strategic planning meetings every month or two with 20 plus executives, and we would all meet in Kentucky every other month for a couple of days and work on this topic. In one of the sessions, we had the goal, our charge for the day was to come up with a purpose statement and come up with our core values. And I was surprised, honestly, that it didn't take longer than it did. We had a pretty big group of people, and whenever you have a big group of motivated, busy people, getting to some common language with something that we were really hoping to find significance in can be challenging. But what we came up with, Alex, we're very proud of, and our purpose statement reads as follows. Our purpose is to make a difference in people's lives by creating unforgettable customer experiences and great projects. So we really tried to encapsulate a lot in that one sentence. And I think when we break down all of it, we really, really do. And beyond that, Alex, we came up with three core values that we live and breathe every day. And number one is we put safety and quality of life first. Number two is we are customer and relationship driven. And number three is the golden rule, we treat others the way we want to be treated.
Wow. And so you're a finance guy. There's a lot of cost bringing all the people together in a room to do that besides flying just all their time. Did the company get a return on that time?
Well, I'd say yes, Alex. And it's, you know, being a financial guy, some of that is maybe challenging to measure in dollars and cents. But the intangible benefits that I think we have gained over the years by coming up with that and really going through that exercise and thinking about the company's future and the future generations of our team members, et cetera, it has paid off and it will continue to pay off such that, you know, another 60 years from now, the company's still in existence and being led by even better and brighter people and carrying on the tradition.
For developing the values, was it a matter of articulating them, or was it discovering them? How much of it was already, as well as with the purpose, how much of it was in the experience and soul of the company, and how much of it was you had to create?
I would say, Alex, 99% of it was already in the soul of the company. And in a lot of respects, these values and the purpose statement existed in how we already operated. It was really a function of articulating these things and putting them together in a way that is very easy to understand. We can recite it. Our people can recite it and think about it and talk to customers and vendors and each other about it. And it was really more a function of, let's just come up with some good words. And it was as much of a wordsmith project as it was to coming to that mutual understanding.
Great. And so did you guys do this on your own, or do you have somebody help you with this process?
We had someone help us with the process. The strategic planning meetings that I had mentioned that went on for almost 2 years, I would say, came out of the Vistage group. So we started with a Vistage person who was helping us kind of steer the process. And it was funny because over time, you know, he became more of an observer as opposed to a facilitator. And it was the growth of our group, I would say, that started out and then kind of took it from there.
Interesting. So the Vistage was something that brought new concepts and ideas to Gray?
Yes. Stephen Gray, our president and CEO at the Gray Inc. level, and Bob Moore, our president and CEO at our West Region level, had both participated in different Vistage groups throughout the years. And some of those concepts we stole, borrowed to continue to apply with our own management teams.
You can use liberated.
I like that.
Okay. And so you said you about 6 years ago, five, 6 years ago?
Yeah, it was at least that, Alex, 6, 7 years ago.
And so kind of back of the envelope, what's the growth been like since then for Gray?
You know, the growth has been pretty dramatic, Alex. When the recession hit in 8, 9, and 10, things were really bleak. The revenues and sales were down. Our headcount was significantly down. You know, in the West region alone, we got down to about 48 people and about $50 million worth of volume. And this year, we're at about 300 people in the Western region, and we will probably do close to $200 million in volume. So we've grown substantially over the last 7 or 8 years, coming out of the recession, coming out stronger, coming out with a great, grounded place to start from with our core values, our strategic plan, and all of us being on the same page.
So an exponential growth rate. And this was part of that?
Absolutely. It certainly coincided with it, and I like to think that it had a lot to do with it.
And so a lot of companies, Brian, they'll go through and they'll go through this process and exercise of defining their core values and purpose. Those things get posted on the wall and they start to die. How does Gray keep these alive? How are they more than just dead words on a wall?
Well, I can give you a couple of examples, Alex. Our first core value is we put safety and quality of life first. Stephen Gray, our president and CEO, lives and breathes and sleeps safety. It's the first thing he thinks about when he gets up in the morning, and it's the last thing he thinks about when he goes to bed at night. And Stephen Gray has said to us, I don't care if this company makes a dollar as long as we're safe. Now, I know that there's some intention in those words, but it goes to describe how dedicated he is to this. And Gray has invested greatly in safety programs. We've been nationally recognized by the Association of General Contractors in 2014 and received their top safety award, competing with the likes of the largest construction companies in the world. Every Tuesday at 11 o'clock in the morning Western Time and 2 p.m. Eastern Time, we have a call with everyone in the company to discuss safety. Every day at around 2 o'clock in the afternoon, an email comes out from Stephen Gray that discusses any safety incident that has arisen across the several hundred of projects that Gray is working on each day. And we do this as a way not to punish anyone, but more as a way to learn lessons and share and to get back to our first core value and send people home in better shape than they came to work that day.
Is there any story you can think of to share right now in terms of how the one of the stories that were shared?
There's stories that get shared. I mean, we are a construction company. We've got hundreds of people, thousands of people working on job sites every day. We talk about minor things of a cut because the guy wasn't wearing the right type of gloves or he wasn't wearing a face shield while he was cutting something, to property damage where a truck fell into a ditch. Anything from the most minor to a more egregious matter, and it gets discussed. And recently we broke a sprinkler head in a store that we were working on and flooded the store. So there's really a variety of topics that get covered, again, all in the vein of sharing information and trying to prevent that from happening again.
So if there is an incident, does the person responsible have to disclose on the call? Is that sort of the protocol?
Yeah, it is. I mean, we try to get the people involved in investigating the accident and dealing with the issue to speak to the crowd firsthand and tell them what happened, why we think it happened, and how we prevent it from happening again.
Yeah, that's got to be a challenge with all of the subcontractors, and they're not all wearing gray, right?
They're not, Alex, but we do have processes in place where every person who steps onto a gray site has to watch a safety video, has to take a safety test, has to have full compliance with their hard hat, their safety vest, their eyewear, and their footwear, and their handwear, where they become committed to what Gray's safety values are and have to live that too.
Cool. Well, it's time for our first break, so we'll give it to Paul for the break.
And just a quick reminder that there's a magazine that accompanies this radio show. If you're enjoying the radio show, you should check out Confident ROI Magazine. The new issue has two articles about CEOs struggling with challenging times, just like we're talking about today, and what tools help them through those problems. And there's articles from thought leaders like Vern Harnish on strategy and Dr. Brad Smart on top grading. All that and more, and here's the most amazing part, you can sign up for free. That's right, F-R-E-E, at ConfidentROI.com. The only way to discover the right tool to advance your company to the next stage. All right. I just had one quick question as I'm listening to you guys talk here. Can I throw one in here? You talked, Alex, about the challenge of doing consulting in another country. I heard that you guys have projects all over the country and maybe even outside of the country in other places. Or just how do you handle different communication, different language, different cultures, people have different ways of approaching things. You know, in Mexico, they go take a siesta in the middle of the afternoon, or I don't know if they still do that, or other countries, they have different ways of working. How do you handle those different cultures and communicate in different languages through all these projects?
It's a great question, Paul. And Gray has an office in Tokyo, Japan. And we've had a presence in Tokyo for a long time to facilitate and assist companies who are based in Japan that want to do projects in America. So Gray is organized by market, and we include in our market representation Japanese, Korean, and European. And we have people on our team that come from those locations, have experience in those locations, and can embrace those different challenges that occur when we're working outside the country. Gray's presently building a large pet food manufacturing facility in Canada. And while, yes, they are a close neighbor, things are different in Canada. And we will find ways to partner with local experts that can help us deal with some of those unique challenges working across the border or in places that we're not familiar.
Any quick stories that come to mind, crazy examples of Americans going over and not understanding that things are done differently over here?
I do know recently in the work that's been taking place in Canada, you know, unemployment's very high in Canada right now. There's a little bit of protectionism that we see whereby our guys who are going there to work really get scrutinized at the border and end up spending the better part of a day just trying to get through customs to explain what we're doing here in their country.
The Canadians are cracking down. No wonder it's quiet at the border here now. Well, that's interesting. But just finish up on safety, Ryan. Again, you're a finance guy. How does the company measure safety? How does it work with the financials? How does it weigh it when it's measuring performance? Could you share something along that line?
Sure, Alex. For construction companies, we get assigned a modification rating. And that is a long formula that is assigned by the states, but it's a function of work hours divided into injured work hours. So we have to measure and report for OSHA purposes all of our hours worked and all of our injured hours that are incurred. The rule of thumb in construction is anything below one is healthy. Anything that is above one, you know, is worth a little scrutiny. And Gray's mod rating today is in the mid-50s, which is best of class amongst construction companies. And that really relates to a tangible dollar. And I look at it this way. For every dollar of insurance premium that might be expended, we pay 55 cents of what that would normally cost. So we do see very tangible savings when it comes to insurance premiums, and something that we can measure very tangibly by our safety record.
Yeah, that definitely below one is something, especially in the construction industry. 0.5, wow. I mean, usually you have to be a couple person office to get that kind of modification rating. So
yeah,
that is,
we're very proud of that, Alex. It is a differentiating factor for our company. You know, it's great from a marketing and business development standpoint, customers trying to compare us to our peers. But again, it does fit right back nicely to our core value. You know, we do put safety and quality of life first, and that number, I think, helps prove it.
Yeah, and it'll show up in the bottom line just by paying less for risk management.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. How about the second core value?
You know, our second core value, it seems to be a no-brainer, but let me expand on it a bit. You know, we're customer and relationship driven. The first part of that is easy to explain, and I think many companies will grab onto, oh, the customer's always right. You know, if it costs a dollar to solve that problem, you know, you need to spend that dollar regardless of what the issue is. And our customers, they see value in our relationship. Two-thirds of the work over the last 10 years that Gray has done, Alex, has been repeat work. And when you talk about the number of projects that we do and the volume that we do, that is a pretty remarkable statistic. We're not the type of company that does a lot of public works We're not building bridges. We're not doing roads. We're not doing public schools. We're not doing jails, things like that. And the reason we don't, Alex, is we found that we can't necessarily be as successful in that type of work because you don't get the benefit of developing the relationship with the customer. A lot of those projects are dollar-based. They'll go to the lowest bidder. Having a terrific relationship that's really keyed on us wanting to do a lot of work for this customer in the future just isn't there. It's more of a one and done. You know, that statistic of 2/3 of our work being for repeat customers is very telling.
Why don't you talking about customers? Can you mention any of your customers?
Sure. Gray has done about 1,000 manufacturing projects in the history of time that it's been around. And some of those are for very large, you know, name brand companies that we all know, including Siemens, Michelin, BMW, Toyota, Mercedes. We work a lot for in the retail world out here, Starbucks, all of the Gap brands, Walmart, Costco. Gray's customer list is probably one of its greatest assets.
Wow, you guys aren't building barns anymore.
Absolutely, absolutely not.
So some of the square footage on this, some of the bigger sizes.
I mean, some of these things, Alex, can be in excess of 1 million square feet.
Wow, that's a lot of floor to clean. Give us an example of how something was done maybe behind the scenes to deliver that customer-centric experience. It's easy to talk about it, but how does that show up?
Well, I think for us, Alex, in the West region, one thing I can point to, Gray in the West region has been doing work for Gap since the early 2000s. And when we first started out doing work for Gap, and Gap is one of the largest retailers in the country when you talk about store count, we failed miserably. And we failed miserably because we could not grasp their way of doing things. As a large retailer, they have their own program. They tell you how to do things. It's not the other way around. It was a tough way. It was a tough lesson for us to learn. I remember saying to Bob, our CEO, we're not good enough to work for Gap. He convinced me, let's hang in there. Let's continue to invest in our people and train to the process and have them understand. And about 5 years later, we were awarded Gap's Contractor of the Year award. So I think that we weren't going to just discount them because we weren't good enough. That wasn't the case. We had to invest in our people to service that customer. The customer service, I think, is recognized through the national award of their Contractor of the Year. But it really was, you know, a concerted, intended effort to train and develop our people into the Gap way of doing things.
And what were some of the skills that were necessary to be trained?
You know, it's funny, like I said, Alex, a large retailer like that has a sophisticated construction department, and they've developed their own software and systems and processes for how they do things. Where we struggled was communication and utilizing their system as it related to, you know, weekly reports and schedule updates and communicating progress. And we could build and turn over a store on time, but we weren't doing it the Gap way of doing things. So in learning and cutting our teeth there and then applying that to customers like Walmart, customers like Sears and Penney's and Costco, and learning and understanding that we have to buy into the process and train, it's made us a much better company.
It sounds like it's kind of a communication. I think Stephen Gray talks about it on your company's website in terms of that customer experience. You guys build buildings, and that's an obvious thing that they hire you for, but what is that customer experience? Is that part of that communication that the Gap wanted?
It's that, Alex, and I like to tell our folks, you know, we want to make our customers' life easier. You know, a fellow that's in charge of opening a store on time, an H&M store on time, and we're given 12 weeks to do it, and it's really a 24-week project, they don't want to deal with the headache. So we try and really relieve our customers of the headaches that are inherent in the construction process. And we do that through a variety of tools. Gray has a proprietary quality management system, as well as, I mentioned, our safety program, and tools that we've developed to really foster that communication and give our customers confidence that things are being taken care of such that they can sleep at night.
And is that something you hire people that understand that, or you train them? Does Gray tend to develop talent from the entry level or bring in experienced people? And how do they get it? How do they get them to do it the Gray way and deliver that customer experience?
That's a great question. We have found, as we've grown so much in the recent years, we've hired a lot of people. People running the organization today really have, you know, 20 plus years of experience. Our current operating officer in Kentucky started out as an intern. So he's been with the company a long time. Many of the people in the East have been with the company 20 plus, 30 plus years. There is this culture that the Gray family has developed over the years to get us to a place where we do all sing from the same hymnal, and all of our people are on the same page, where they do want to deliver that customer experience such that the next time that customer has a project, they'll think of us first.
All right. And how about the final core value?
You know, our final core value is one that Howard Gray preached and preached and preached forever and continues to do so. And it's a simple one. It's the golden rule, and to treat people the way you want to be treated. You know, construction is a team sport. A big part of our team, for instance, are our subcontractors. We deal with thousands of different subcontractors across the country, across the world. And we know that our success is dependent upon their success. So we have to communicate. We have to treat them fairly. We have to find people that will give us good pricing, that will train their people, that will buy into our safety program, help us get our jobs done. So when someone calls, and, you know, as the finance guy, I get multiple calls a week. Hey, Brian, I know we haven't been paid yet on this job, and the customer payment isn't due, but we're really hurting for payroll this week. Can you help us out? And I almost never say no, and I think our people would attest to that, because I know the value of that relationship, that two-way street, and if we can help someone out, we're going to. And something simple like, you know, fronting them some money before we've been paid is a little outside of the industry standard, but it's something that we do commit to. And then the other part, Alex, is really just within our own team members to treat people the way they want to be treated. It's a big company. It's very diverse. We're dealing at present with generational differences amongst our team members and how we work together. And we do have an open office environment. And how we work together cohesively is important. And it's something that we do have to be cognizant of. And you know, when we align that third core value of treating others the way we want to be treated, it's that much easier.
I think everyone's dealing with the generational and how they want to be treated is not necessarily there's some subtle differences, right, between the generations.
Yeah, subtle might be an understatement, Alex, but most definitely.
And anything you do, Brian, to bring the core values alive with your team?
Any company meeting, Alex, anyone that I'm holding or any of our people are holding, the first thing we do is we start off with what are our core values. So if I'm hosting a meeting with my team, and we'll go around the table and we will call on people and ask them, what is our number one core value? What is our number two core value? What is our purpose statement? What's our number three core value? You know, there's some gentle chiding if they can't recite it right off the bat, but it makes an impression. So I do that, as well as every other person who's starting a meeting within our organization starts off with our purpose statement and our core values.
Cool. And you find that helps to bring them alive?
It's that, Alex. And it's also, as you talk about in your book, it's a way for us all to align, you know, ourselves to be on the same page and heading in the same direction. Everything we do kind of falls back to that. And I remember, Alex, when Gray was doing a project for Michelin, they applied a strategy in any decision-making process of, does it help us sell a tire? For us, you know, we've kind of grabbed that thought process and think about the decisions that we make and the things that we want to do with our organization. Does it help us be safe? Does it help us develop our customer relationship? Is it something where we can exhibit that we treat others the way we want to be treated?
Nice. Helps you when you have difficult issues to deal with. That's the alignment point.
And it helps keep us grounded, Alex. It's always something to fall back on that I think is very solid, and it's something great that our folks can all grasp onto.
All right. Well, it's time for our second break.
And the second thought we want to leave you with is, if you're trying to decide what business tool or concept to implement, if you really want to advance your company, just can't figure out the right tools to make it happen, well, there is a name you should get to know. It's Vorobyev. Alex Vorobyev, the host of this show, was the first business advisor to focus on helping companies and leaders not just find where they're starting from, but the right tool to get them to where they want to go. Just go to ConfidentROI.com and you can be confident that you're going to learn about a lot of different tools, some of which we talk about in this show. And you can even enter your question in the Hey Vorobyev section or call his office at 949-478-0042 to schedule a complimentary call. There, we've taken away all the excuses. It's free. It's simple. It's easy. Confident ROI. Give him a call today. Hey, Vorobyev, how does that crazy idea work where people just put a question and go, hey, Vorobyev?
From one of my friends, whenever we were talking about concepts and things, he kind of call me on it and go, hey, Vorobyev, what are you talking about? Put their information in there or put their question in there and it's out there.
It's like a free chance to ask you a question here and see if you really know what you're talking about here. Well, hey, Vorobyev, check it out, definitely.
We're going to. And it's good to know that Brian and Gray are building out your favorite store where you shop all the time.
That's true.
H&M.
That's true. You know, it's funny, but you're laughing. My son-in-law, that is his favorite store. That's where he shops. He does shop all the time there. So I'll tell him now. We met the people who put it together.
All right. Brian, we got one more segment here. How about we shift to you and talk about what business concepts and books had the most influence on you?
Yeah, that's a good topic, Alex. I like talking about me. You know, I'm a Claremont McKenna grad, so back in the day, Peter Drucker and his writings were influential, and it, at the time was very on the leading edge of management and leadership. So I got introduced to him through the Claremont connection. Gray, actually, we did a planning strategy session one year based on Jim Collins' book, Of Good to Great, and we followed that up with Built to Last and took some good concepts out of there. My wife has been a fan of John Wooden for many, many years, so she introduced me to some of his writings, and those were impactful on me as well, The Man of the Great Quotes. Jack Welch, read some of his books. And most recently, I've been reading Ryan Holiday. His book, Ego is the Enemy, I think is a great book for business leaders and entrepreneurs who have made mistakes and can learn from those mistakes.
And which one do you find you kind of keep coming back to, or you're having conversations trying to solve problems and that memory keeps firing?
I'd probably say Peter Drucker, Alex, and maybe it's because it was the first lessons that I started to learn outside of the classroom and taking an interest in reading on my own.
What specifics there and in what context do you apply Drucker?
It's noting that difference between leadership and management and applying those concepts and understandings to a situation, because there's times in running a business where we need a good, strong leader. And there's other times when we're trying to solve a problem where we need to manage our way through a very sticky situation.
Ryan Holiday is the ego's the enemy. Does that reference Stoic philosophy?
Yeah, it does. I mean, he goes back to Marcus Aurelius and Plato and a lot of the early philosophers. I had so little interest in that as a young person in school, but as I've grown older and I hope a little wiser, I take an interest in those things and wish I'd spent a little more time studying that back in the day.
I have the same regret. And I think they might have taught that philosophy, Stoicism, back in the day when we went to school. I'm pretty sure today the modern curriculum has expunged Stoicism from curriculum. It might not fit all the parameters on what's acceptable.
I would venture a guess that you're correct.
But it's making a real resurgence, which is interesting considering that it's not widely supported by academia philosophy.
It should be. I mean, business is about people and it's about relationships. and that understanding. And if you've got some of that foundation and can understand some of those things, I think it will help you interact and deal a lot more effectively within a team environment, with your peers, with your supervisors, your customers, and everyone.
Yeah, it's the Stoic philosophy on what do you control? Identify what you control and what you don't control, and the things you do control, worry about that, and things you don't worry about them. I find I use with my daughter all the time.
It's a hard one to grasp.
It is, but her horse gives her the opportunity to learn about that all the time, which is good. But it's amazing how that philosophy is so, simple is the right word, but just to the point in terms of helping give some mindset and clarity to how to approach things that happen out in the world. And it's not all going to go according to plan.
No, it never does. And, as a financial guy with an A personality, I'm a control freak and I can't control everything despite my desire to. And I know that that leads to stress and unproductive time, that my time can be spent better elsewhere. But it is letting go of those things that I can't control that is a challenge.
All right. Well, speaking of that, we always like to ask our guests, related to chapter 2 of my book, Transform Your Company and Confronting Reality and Dealing with Feedback. Has there ever been a time when you delayed confronting reality, and what was the cost of that, and how did you overcome that?
It seems like it happens a little too often, Alex. In a very tangible manner, we've made entries into markets that seemed hot and there was a lot of business to be had. And the hospitality market's a great example. You can drive around where our office is in Anaheim and see a dozen hotels being built right now. So we jumped into the hospitality market, and it proved to not be financial success. And we were in that market for close to 5 or 6 years. And had we jumped out when we saw that this wasn't for us, we could have saved ourselves several zeros at the end of the balance sheet and income statement, and a lot of headaches for our senior team, too. So, yeah, we definitely waited too long to exit that market. Additionally, with several hundred people in the company and dealing with employee issues where we haven't acted quickly, and I always tell everyone, hire slow and fire fast. If you identify that person that's not working out, we need to make that change, however uncomfortable that may be. And those are the hard ones to do. But delayed change in employment status for some of those folks can definitely has cost our company money and can definitely be very expensive.
Kind of that gray area, right? I mean, you probably saw the initial financial results from the hospitality industry, and you probably sense with the employee, what should you have seen sooner? How would you react differently now?
In hindsight, when you look at the situation and you see, were these people that we wanted to work with? It became more of a situation that I described earlier, that we're not good at fighting. And we don't want to fight. We want to develop a relationship. We don't want to approach a project and start day one that we're preparing our claim. We had to take certain risks with subcontractors and in a very poor market in building some of these hotels and really working in a manner that was more confrontational as opposed to collaborative, and it was not a recipe for success. So I think we could have given a little more credibility to the beginning of the situation and taken action as opposed to managing on hope that I hope this is going to be okay instead of making an uncomfortable decision earlier on.
Let's shift gears one more time here. You're a CFO. You've probably implemented a lot of business concepts from IT to systems and processes. Any that you could share that you either got a good return on your investment, both time and money, for the company, or you didn't?
We've tried to grow the company, Alex, organically and inorganically. And inorganically, an example is, a merger acquisition. In 2014, Gray acquired Timberwolf Construction, a nationally recognized retail contractor based in Upland, California. and oftentimes competitor to ours, to us out here in the West and in the retail market. So through that acquisition, we have embraced the Timberwolf folks and continue to have them operate independently, with the exception of, as I mentioned, safety and our programs as related to our brand and our purpose and the other cultural things. But that's something that we've, you know, Howard Gray used to say, how do we make one and one more than two? The merger acquisition of Timberwolf, I think, is a shining example. Now, we've done many other things over the years that cost us money, Alex. And first, I got introduced to you, you know, an investment that we made in an unrelated business to try and diversify Gray's portfolio, you know, did not work out. In hindsight, you know, had we done a little more investigation and understanding of the risks associated with that business, we may not have ended up, you know, writing that investment off and abandoning it. You know, on the software side, we've tried dozens of different things over the years. Some have worked out and some haven't. You know, I see those really as tools. And again, I have to fall back to, it's the people and it's our commitment to a new piece of software in leading that effort and getting people on board with, hey, this is a new way to do the same thing, a new better way to do the same thing. But again, we've tried and shelved lots of things. One thing we did specifically was we implemented an estimating software. And hey, we're a construction company and we do estimating. But we don't really do estimating. We do a lot of bid compilation, and that's the difference. You know, we're not doing takeoffs. We're working closely with subcontractors to provide pricing as opposed to, you know, what's the square footage that we're going to build. And we look at it more so as a checkpoint and in evaluating a good subcontractor's bid as opposed to our guys doing the work additionally themselves. So that's a piece of software that still sits in our system that no one uses that we paid for many, many years ago.
Well, it's always interesting what percentage of softwares actually make it into use and realize 50% of its potential, or at least what was sold originally.
Yes.
Well, looks like we're coming to the end of our show today. And how can people get in touch with Gray Construction if they're interested in working with you?
Well, you can very simply go to www.gray.com and you can find all of our different contacts for all of our different people across the country. We are organized by market in first and geography second, so we can service any customer for anything that they need across the country and in many instances across the world.
And that's Gray with an A.
Correct. GRAY.com.
I always get confused with Gray's, which spelling is. Okay, GrayWithAnA.com. That's great. All right. Well, thanks for coming on, Brian. We appreciate it. Look for any projects we can see around Southern California.
Yeah, I mean, we're sitting here in the studio across from South Coast Plaza, and we just finished a project across the street without naming names, but you can pretty much walk through that mall at any time, and we're probably doing something over there.
All right, and I saw your Tommy Bahamas in Palm Springs, and I'm looking forward to going and visiting that one. So thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Alex. Appreciate
and do we get any special discounts for knowing him? Do we go? Because I go to the Tommy Bahamas. Now I'm interested.
They don't charge you more.
They don't charge
you. You go out to Palm Springs a lot.
So. That's true, exactly. All right, thanks, guys. All right, you've been listening to another episode of Confident ROI, the one show you can confidently listen to to get real return on your investment. Right here in Orange County's only.
Too.
That's true.